ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ अज्ञानतिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नाम श्रेष्ठं मनमपि शचीपुत्रमात्रस्वरूपं रूपं तस्यागजमुरुपरिं माधुरीं गोष्णवतीं राधाकुण्डं गिरिवरमहो राधिका माधवाशं प्राप्तो यस्य प्रथितकृपया श्रीगुरुं तं नतोऽस्मि। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरो श्रीयतः परकमलं श्रीगुरून् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपं साग्रजातं सहगणरघुनाथन्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनसहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधाकृष्णपादान् सहगणललिता शिवशाखान्विताश्च। Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. I'd mentioned before that when we go to holy places or temples, we expect the atmosphere to be religious, spiritual. We don't expect it to be like that in the big bad world elsewhere. So people go on pilgrimage, and it's not just a matter of going and seeing and coming back and doing the rituals, but it's also a matter of participating in, experiencing the atmosphere of the holy places, or the holy place they're going to. And the atmosphere is also created by the pilgrims, by their mood of faith, reverence, affection for the deity, for their religious and or spiritual mood. So they both participate in it and they contribute to it. And of course there are so many factors in that contribute to the spiritual atmosphere. What's there exactly? The temple, maybe one major temple, or the temples, the river, in the case of the Ganga, and maybe river, Yamuna, so many temples in the case of Vrindavan. There are so many other factors, which I'll get to in a minute. Once I was invited to stay in a guest room of a school in Vrajamandala, fairly close to Govardhan, maybe a couple of kilometers. We were just in some fields, and by looking around, you wouldn't guess that you were in Vrajamandala. You know, in all respects, it seemed to be just like any other part of North India, of UP. The fields and farmers would come for their agricultural activities, and the boys and girls, I think, also would come to school and go away. They did a program for them also, and they really didn't have hardly any more idea of Krishna consciousness than any kids anywhere else. They're into their study and their thinking of their future and their career and so many things. So living there for a few days, I think it was about there, about five days. And it didn't feel so much like being in Vrindavan as being in a place where, just like if you're in Vrindavan town, you'll always hear bells ringing and you'll see pilgrims coming up. Most people will have Vaishnav Tilak, and there's a whole atmosphere created by that, by being in a place where people are expressly devotional. And if they're not, then it's at least for myself, because I'm not seeing Krishna's pastimes at every moment, just in case you were wondering. Well, in one sense, we see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes in the terms of the Sankirtan movement expanding. Anyway, I must say that I didn't get the same devotional boost that I didn't directly experience. Of course, it was going on. Whether one is aware or not, one is blessed by the holy dham by being there, especially if one is trying to act in a devotional way. But that just brought home to me how much the atmosphere that is created by the temples and people and devotion. And that can be created anywhere. If people are devotional, then, as Srila Prabhupada said, if we actually have a motive to serve Krishna, then we're not living in this material world, we're living in Vaikuntha. And he said that the temple is Vaikuntha, inasmuch as Krishna is there, the devotees are there, they're serving him, they have no other motive, as much as we have no other motive to serve him, that much we'll be in the spiritual world. We won't be in the material world. But still, of course, there is a difference between, in a very deep ontological sense, between that of Vrindavan and anywhere else in the material world, because the atmosphere can be created by devotees anywhere, or even by one devotee. Srila Prabhupada brought the atmosphere of Vrindavan. He brought Vrindavan with him wherever he went within this material world. But when the devotee goes away, if others don't maintain that spirit, then again, it's like shining a light and then you put off the torch and then again it's dark. Whereas in Vrindavan is always the spiritual world, whether we perceive it or not. But definitely an atmosphere is created if we're... Oh yeah, I wanted to say about that. If there are some parts of Navadvip town where if you go in residential areas, and in all respects, it is places where the pilgrims circuit. It just seems like any other town in West Bengal. There are political slogans painted on the walls. And people just going about their daily business like that. So the holy places, there's a whole atmosphere created by... even the shops. There may be electrical shops, for instance. Just thinking of my friend Raghavendra Acharya in Udupi, who has an electrical shop in the Parikrama circuit. But if you go in his shop, and he'll be very happy to talk to you about Krishna consciousness. So even if there has to be in holy places regular shops also, but hopefully the shopkeepers will also be, and definitely that will be there. Someone who lives in a holy place, they're going to be influenced by that. Even if they're trying to be, they don't try to be. Even I remember many years ago, this Ravanari from originally from Lebanon, he's passed away now, disciple of Prabhupada. He was a 13th generation mullah family, and he's very highly learned in the Quran and everything. He's disciple of Srila Prabhupada. So he was traveling around India and meeting various Muslims. And in Mathura, he met the leaders of the Muslim community. And they said, yeah, we also love Krishna. We're from Mathura, after all. So the influence will be there. Mathura at one time was a center of Buddhism. Somehow they forgot Krishna. If you go to Mathura Museum, and the person who wrote a book on the, probably the first book in English written on Mathura was some Englishman called Grouse, in the 19th century, I believe it was. And he also said how he recreated the history that it was once a Buddhist center. So, while at the time when Mathura was a Buddhist center, it would have been more difficult to remember Krishna than now. And in most respects, most of Mathura, it's a big city, and much of it is just very secular. It's become an educational hub. There are so many English medium schools have come up around Mathura, and of course there's an oil refinery there. The army is there? The army is there. There's a canton. Yeah, that's right. There's a cantonment. There's so many. And Agra, just down the road, there's another one. So it requires some work to keep this spiritual atmosphere alive. Anyway, especially around the temple, just like in Udupi or Guruvayur, there's so many shops. When you come into the main entrance of the temple, I think there's only one entrance. No, there are side entrances also. The main entrance, there's so many shops selling all, they sell paraphernalia connected with the deity. In Guruvayur, I'm told all the shops, they're mostly all owned by Muslims now, somehow or other. But it'll be, there are little pictures of the deity and Tilak, if in Udupi and Dwaraka and Vrindavan and Navadvip. And in Navadvip, you're in the brass shops, apart from selling regular brass items, they'll sell kartals for doing kirtan, and there'll be mridanga shops, which you don't see everywhere. As far as I know, they have in Navadvip, in Vrindavan also, they must bring them from West Bengal, because you need a certain type of clay to make mridangas, which you definitely don't get in Vrindavan. In Calcutta they have also, so you don't get them everywhere, mridanga shops. And of course the pictures, they sell little books about the Mahatmyas telling the glories of the place, and they may have other pictures also, just like in recently, as in Ek Chakra, so there are pictures of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu being sold. And also some so-called Paramahamsa and Kali, because they're also popular. It's not that everyone's a devotee of Gaur Nithai. And brass shops, you'll get more. Here in South India, the brass shops, in a holy place, they're more likely, they'll have these deepams. That you'll get in any brass shop in South India, but this, you may get more ornate ones. Shop selling deities in Vrindavan, in Loi Bazaar, you get paraphernalia for deity worship, including ready-made clothing for the little Ladu Gopal deities. Prabhupada used to make his own, he used to sew his own for his home deities. He didn't buy from outside. As much as possible, we can, if for the deities if we make among our own devotees. That's very nice. Of course, there are professionals who do a very nice, very beautiful. So that's also a consideration. But definitely the devotees, if they see that they've worked hard and they make some clothes for the deities and they feel very happy, there's a devotee, that the Lord is now wearing the clothes that I made for him. So that's different from the buying from a professional. It's the same with anything. You can buy flowers and vegetables from the market, but there's a difference if you grow yourself and offer to Krishna. Prabhupada said that Krishna likes 100 times more food that's grown by the devotees and offered to him than that which is purchased in the market. So that's another thing. When we go in the temple, there'll be people selling fruit for offering to the deity. And here in South India, coconut, banana, lemon, these are standard. And all other kinds of paraphernalia, tulsi malas, tulsi for offering loose and then malas, and may get ready-made garlands to offer to the deities. You get a little ready-made plate with some incense and some camphor, so you can offer. In Bengali, that's called a dala, little basket like this, and it has all the different items like that. So that's a standard thing. You can buy, and the beggars, that's a sign of a successful holy place. The more beggars are there. And that's also standard. It's also part of the atmosphere when you go to a holy place, because you're supposed to give charity, so you have to give to the, you're supposed to give to the beggars also. They were there when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was there in Puri. It's mentioned in the Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then you have, I don't know now, but they used to, you give a 1 rupee note, there's shopkeepers doing that. At Namakkal they have still that. Give 1 rupee note, now it's more like 10 rupees, and then they give you 95 paisa back in coins, so you can give to all the beggars and everyone. So it's a whole economy is going on there, and it creates an atmosphere also. And it's not that these shopkeepers are just totally materialistic. And we can understand, one way we can, they're also devotees. That we, in many cases, we can understand this, because when we go on Harinam Sankirtan in many holy places, we find that in many times the flower sellers themselves bring a garland for myself if I'm there, or who's leading the kirtan, or they throw flowers on the devotees. They have a feeling that this is something they want to offer their flowers. Then the pilgrims themselves, especially if they've walked to the holy place, which still many of them do, if they've come from a long way, bumping in a bus, they're excited to get to the place. There's a feeling of anticipation that I waited so long. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that's described. He was a Tirthayatri also, right? He traveled all around. When he came to Puri, when he reached Ataranala, the bridge with 18 arches just at the entrance to Puri, then he became so excited. And then when he entered the temple, he collapsed and fainted in ecstasy. Prabhupada also, he was, in his childhood, he was always thinking, how can I go to Puri? He'd look at the train timetables and Vrindavan. He'd look at the train timetables and think, how can I go there? But it wasn't until he was a young man that he finally got the chance to go to Puri. So the pilgrims, yeah, and they'll be chanting at Tirumala, the Govinda, Govinda. It makes an atmosphere. Then you feel more, yeah, this is great. This is what I want to do. It's different to the Christian concept of going to a holy place where it's to get rid of your sins, which is there in the Hindu concept also. But in Christianity, you're supposed to have a mood of contrition. You know that word, contrition? It means feeling very bad. I'm a sinner. In Christianity, you don't even have to do any sins to be a sinner. Everyone's born a sinner. You have to be redeemed by bathing in the blood of Jesus. Well, I guess we are all born sinners, but the the emphasis in the bhakti cult is not, yeah, we're very fallen, but how merciful is Krishna, how kind he is, how he loves us, so he's forgiving us. we don't focus so much on our own sins as how we want to see the Lord, serve the Lord, decorate, offer something to him. So it's more an exchange of love than feeling of fear of how I'm got to get it right, otherwise I'm going to burn in hell forever. I really hope that Catholicism is the real thing and not Protestantism. Or I really hope that Protestantism is the real thing and not Catholicism. Because there's no way to know intelligently, and the Catholics say you have to be a Catholic or you go to hell forever. And the Protestants say you have to be a Protestant and you go to hell forever. So it's really... You got to get in the right sect, otherwise you're doomed to hell forever with absolutely no hope of redemption whatsoever. Even if you're good and you're praying to God and you're trying to be good and everything, but if you're in the wrong camp, you're finished, you're doomed forever. So, at least the followers of the bhakti cults, they know, and they have the faith that God is not so cruel. He's very nice, actually. That's why we like to visit him. He's so nice, and we want to be with him. Prasad, you go in, you buy things to offer to the Lord, and you come out, and then you can buy prasad. And you may get a little bit given to you also. So that's an essential part of the pilgrim. So all these different things, it's bookstalls, there may be also, apart from selling pamphlets, there may be in some places actual bookstalls. That's emphasized more in ISKCON than in other places. Or you can get actual books dealing with the subject of transcendence. So there are all kinds of stimuli which help the pilgrim to be transported to an atmosphere which is quite different from that which he's used to at home. With so many people, shaved heads, it used to be that people would go to a holy place and they'd have to shave their head, the men would have to, in South India, in some places, particularly Tirupati, but other places also. Women also sometimes shave their heads, which is a great sacrifice for women to shave their heads because for their hair is so important to them. But in our Gauriya culture, we don't recommend that. So the whole feeling, and we're supposed to feel something different. Oh, we go such a long way, and it's just the same. just something came to my mind. It'll give one of my uncles. He'd been to Belgium for a holiday, and he said, "I don't know why." From England, so I don't know why I went there. It's just the same as here, as England, except people speak a different language. And so, otherwise, just the same. Who would go to Belgium for a holiday? I mean, it's funny. So he went. So if it's just the same as anywhere else, then why bother going? Of course, the material world, in one sense, it's all the same. Just one early BTG I saw, they said in New York City you see advertisements, visit Puerto Rico for a holiday. In Puerto Rico there's advertisements, visit New York. And they are quite different places, I guess, unless you're in the Latino quarter of New York. But still it's going to be very different. Latino quarter? Becoming highly Latinized. Anyway, the whole material world is full of birth, death, old age, and disease. But people like to go and see the varieties of life in different parts of this world. It's a waste of time. The better they go to visit the holy places. And the point of this little talk is that the atmosphere that is created, and actually that atmosphere should also help us to realize that I don't belong in this material world. There is a higher level of consciousness which I should aspire to. I'm speaking in a general way here because I'm discussing the holy places, not just Vaishnava holy places, but others also. And the same should be true of any holy place in any culture or religious tradition. It should inspire us. I spoke about the Vatican and the superb architecture, and not just superb, but it's huge. It looks like some small mountain or something, that St. Paul's Basilica, and the artwork is so outstanding, and everything about it. It was deliberately made to make an impression on people's minds, so that you get an experience of the greatness and glory of God. So it's supposed to uplift us. That's the idea of a tirtha, to lift us over, over and out of the mundane cares and worries that we are absorbed in all the time, to lift our consciousness to a higher platform, so that when we come back into the atmosphere of family affairs, social affairs, and so on, we go back, but we're a little bit up from what we were before we went. And we may have to keep on going regularly to maintain that. Or, of course, regular sadhana. Daily sadhana keeps us padma patramivampasa, living in this world but not touching it, like a lotus leaf is in the water, but aloof from it also. So preserving that atmosphere. This is a major concern, especially in Vrindavan at the present time. Vrindavan has changed so much since Srila Prabhupada established the Krishna Balaram temple there. It was a sleepy little town in Uttar Pradesh, but now there are so many people visiting, and its closeness, its proximity to Delhi has also been its undoing, in as much as it's become in some ways an overspill of Delhi's suburbia, and there's a lot of commercialization, a lot of construction, and modernization in general, so that the atmosphere is, so many people say, it's becoming increasingly commercialized, and it may be more difficult to remember Krishna in such an atmosphere. When you see big advertisements that book your apartment in Prema Kunj or whatever it is, luxury 3 BHK, so many square feet, air conditioning, gated community, and it just looks like advertising like anywhere else. Of course, the next advertisement will be for Swami Bogasananda doing some Bhagavad Katha, which is, you don't get everywhere, mostly in Vrindavan and Govardhan. So it gives some idea that Vrindavan is different. And it will always be different, but it's becoming different in a different way than it used to be. But even previously, many Western devotees, not all of them, but some of them thought when they used to go to Vrindavan and they see garbage and sewage, the pigs covered in, or the, you see half the lower part of their body is all stool water, because they go in the drain which is full of stool, and they come out and the lower part of their body is all wet with stooly water. And then you see open defecation, which no one had imagined in the Western world. You go on the parikrama. I used to go on parikrama of Vrindavan, and it used to be just a road. Part of it was out in the wilderness, and then just you see on the others, just one boy would come out of his house every day and pull down his shorts on the veranda and poop right there, and that kind of thing. And the pig would be there daily for the breakfast. So, and then you find stool here and there everywhere. And the devotees say, it doesn't seem very spiritual. This is Vrindavan. We read in Krishna book about Vrindavan, and it didn't seem to be very spiritual. So Prabhupada explained that this kind of this dirt and poverty, he said, that's to fool materialistic people who won't like to go there. smell of the sewage, the open drains with sewage in it. Yeah. So that will always be there, but there's been some effort, because Vrindavan's become so crowded, to try to control that. The idea that cars should not be allowed in, cars, buses, they should only come up to a certain point and then let people walk because it's too crowded. There's the streets weren't even made for rickshaws, let alone for cars. If even a little Maruti 800 goes in the Loi Bazaar, it just creates a tremendous, just a chokes up everything, and it just becomes one massive truck. Even if you're just walking by foot, it's still difficult to go, what to speak of with. So there's some idea, from time to time the police stop the vehicles coming in, but there's trying to be some move to stop them coming in any time. But the residents, the people who live in the town, they want, so they block it. It's like in Mayapur also. Most of the residents don't want motorbikes coming up close to the temple, but then the leaders of the community do, because they have them. And so it's clash of interest there. Trying to reforest Vrindavan. attempts have been there, but not very successful. Tree planting, garbage removal, no plastic, cleaning the kuns, there's been some success in there. Some of the kuns, they became totally dirty and overgrown with moss, and the water was, what's that word beginning with S? Can't remember it now, it's smelly. So some of the kuns have been cleaned out and fresh water put. Recently Radha Kund was also cleaned out. So that there's some attempt to try to keep it all very spiritual. But it's difficult when the girls and the young women come in from Delhi and other places with these kind of tight, what are they called, leggings, which go down to their knees, and then t-shirts with all overweight and everything's just not much left to the imagination. So it doesn't seem very spiritual. It makes it more difficult to remember Krishna. There should be some dress codes. Maybe you can't do it for a whole town, at least in different temples. Swaminarayan, they do in their temples. They don't allow these vulgar kind of dress. Even at the ashram community, I saw, because I used to, in Surat, I used to go on a japa walk up the river, and the river Tapi. And after some time you come to ashram, and there's a sign there, and Ashleel Poshak Nahi Penda, something like that. Vulgar clothing is not allowed. So we should do, at least in our temples. Maybe we can't do it for the whole of Vrindavan. What about in Vrindavan, they made a shopping mall? How opposite to the spirit of Vrindavan is that? I heard, I haven't seen it. The opposite Krishna Balaram temple, there was Bon Maharaj's College of Oriental Philosophy, which never got on the ground because he didn't get any students. Maybe he got Klaus Klostermeyer or someone briefly, but he didn't get off the ground. But now they made they turned it into Bon Maharaj's Engineering College and Bon Maharaj College of Computer Science and this and that. And you see the young Vrijvasi boys and girls in their uniform going to the school. This secular education that will kill the whole spiritual atmosphere of India. It already has done to a large extent. The concept of dharma is largely gone. If it wasn't for Prabhupada and Prabhupada's ISKCON, then probably India would have completely or 99% lost their culture. Prabhupada gave some spirit of revival, that quote-unquote Hindus started to have some faith in their own culture. But this secular education, it pollutes the mind. And then what happens? Then the sons of the priests, instead of being trained from childhood in Vedas and philosophy, as it used to be, they go to secular schools, and then many of them don't want to be priests. They want to pursue a career. Some of them do, but they come back and they do the priest's work. But the time they could have been studying Shastra and completely absorbed in that, they spend in a mundane school and college, and you see the priests, they may keep a shika, but they, apart from that, they keep a regular modern hairstyle in so many cases. So preserving the atmosphere of the holy place is it also, we just can't keep a little bubble and expect that it'll be completely different from the whole society around it. We hope that the if we make the whole country and the whole world spiritually oriented, Krishna conscious, then people will know the value of going to holy places, and they'll want to go there for, and they'll want to go there. Otherwise, now the tendency is water spots and all this kind of thing. And this Avinash Govinda, he was living in Govardhan, and he told me, he's from Pune, Maharashtra. So he told me he was doing a preaching program. I tell you, I was staying at that school in near to Govardhan. So we did a preaching program there. I remember one of my sannyasi godbrothers, I met him there at the Govardhan. That ashram is there, Bhaktivedanta Ashram or something in Govardhan. Keshav Bharati Maharaj, he was surprised when he said, we were preaching to the Vrajvasis. But they didn't know anything. And Avinash Govinda said, the sons of the priests, they don't know, they don't even know the stories about Govardhan, how he came there. They don't know anything about it. He was teaching them. Which you'd expect at least their fathers would teach them. And I guess their fathers have got the idea that, I don't know what their idea is, just everyone does it. So they send their kids to the college. And then they'll leave, and then who will be the priests? And even if they're the priests, they won't know anything, they won't be able to give any guidance, they won't know what, if it'll be a job for them. Yeah, if I'm a priest at Manasa Ganga, I earn so much money. If I go and work in Delhi, anywhere, if you get a degree, you'll end up in a call center or whatever, most of them. So it's better earnings, and they'll just sit only like that. Of course, that's always been there. That's another thing that which can detract from the atmosphere of a holy place, the greedy priests who harass you for money. So that also detracts, and that's nothing new. In fact, it may be coming down now in the present time. It seems to be less so than when I first came to India. Maybe there are more people to harass in the holy places. Or maybe they learn that by so much harassment that you don't, it's better to be sweet and nice and you get the money out of them. I don't know. But we can also take a clue from all of this, that we really want, the whole purpose of building temples and having ISKCON temples is to create an atmosphere that people like to come to, and when they come to, they feel spiritually uplifted. So to do that, we have to be spiritually uplifted ourselves. Otherwise, it becomes like a museum. People come and look and go away. So let them come and see and go away with something, with upliftment specifically, if they take Prabhupada's books. We want that by coming, people will become closer to Krishna. Actually, it should be our ambition, especially here in India, where people, they don't have so much resistance to becoming Krishna conscious, or so much cultural or social or ideological barriers that people in other places do. So it's a great opportunity for bringing Krishna consciousness to many, many, many people. And we find people like to buy books. What does that mean? We're going door to door, shop to shop, to schools and colleges, selling Srila Prabhupada's books. And why do they buy them? They buy them because they have an idea. Of course, the devotees coming have inspired them, but that the seed of that idea was already in their heart, that we want to know something more about Krishna and about our spiritual culture. So that idea is there at least in a seed. So there is great potential to make literally thousands and lakhs of people devotees. And the more it picks up, the more others will take to it. People have that tendency. If they see there are many, many, many people taking to Krishna consciousness, then they also think, oh, maybe I should take also, and they'll come. So we're talking about holy places and how they're places for crossing over. Krishna makes the holy place, but there's a specific endeavor right here in ISKCON Salem to build a holy place, to invite Krishna to come, and then invite all the public to come to, at the very least, in their minds, see Krishna. But we want to engage them in serving Krishna and bring them closer and closer and closer to Krishna. So we should bear this in mind as we are, that it's the temple is not just the building, but it's a whole atmosphere that we want to create so that people want to come again and again and again and again and serve Krishna more and more and more and take the atmosphere home with them, take up the chanting, take up Krishna consciousness seriously. We should have an ambition. It's a great ambition to build a big temple in this town. But beyond that, the ambition to make the whole town, make the whole district, and then radiate Krishna consciousness to the people all around. Of course, we can't expect that everyone will become Krishna conscious, but let us try. No harm. Every jiva is by constitution part and parcel of Krishna. So, at least theoretically, everyone can become Krishna conscious. So let us try for that, beginning with ourselves. Hare Krishna. Vancha kalpa tarubhyascha kripa sindhubhyascha patitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namo namaha.